Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and as the country struggles to find a way to prevent more rampage shootings like what happened in Newtown, my next guest offers another wrinkle in the phenomenon, links to counterterrorism efforts. Adam Lankford is a criminal justice assistant professor at the University of Alabama. He worked with the U.S. State Department's Anti-Terrorism Assistance Program, and his new book is The Myth of Martyrdom: What Really Drives Suicide Bombers, Rampage Shooters, and Other Self-Destructive Killers. You might have seen his New York Times op-ed in late December. Adam Lankford, welcome to WNYC.
Hi, thanks for having me.
And I guess this is primarily written to change the way we think about suicide bombers like the 9/11 attackers. And you make the case that we should see them first and foremost as suicidal and only secondly as political actors. How come?
Well, frankly, there's a lot of people out there who have strong political beliefs, both in this country and around the world, and that almost ideology becomes a constant for millions of people who want things to change and want them to change dramatically and don't even oppose violence. What makes the vast majority of terrorists different from the tiny percentage who carry out suicide attacks is the presence in their lives of these suicidal risk factors, and that they have less self-worth. They believe that blowing themselves up tomorrow is the most they can ever do. Mentally healthier terrorists realize that just killing yourself tomorrow is not a rational thing for someone who values his or her own life.
And I guess we're so afraid of the suicide bomber because, frankly, it's harder to defend against somebody who's willing to take their own life in the process of taking yours.
Exactly right. Although I would say that right after 9/11, people acted as though this was something that was impossible to deter, because how do you punish someone or scare someone with punishment if they're willing to die? I would differ with that. You can deter suicidal people simply by changing the way that they will be remembered, that they will be perceived, and also by, frankly, sending the message in the case of Islamic suicide terrorists in particular, that God disapproves of their actions and that they will not be going to heaven.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something we can actually do. In the past, we've tried to make that argument on moral grounds, that God disapproves because terrorism is wrong, and that's almost a philosophical quandary. What I'm making is the behavioral argument that very clearly suicide terrorists are suicidal, and Christians, Jews, Muslims all agree that God says that suicide is wrong and prohibited.
And you say that there are basically three things that make both suicide bombers and rampage shooters. They're suicidal, they see themselves as victims, and they're looking for fame and glory. So this would tie together like a 9/11 attacker and a school shooter or a movie theater shooter?
Yeah, absolutely. These are, you know, ultimately they're all acts of murder, suicide, born out of this desire to kill and be killed. So the parallels are really overwhelming. The Virginia Tech killer, he referred to himself, and I think I have the quote here. He said, this is Virginia Tech shooter Sung Hoi Cho. He essentially filmed the martyrdom video, sent it to news stations, and he said, quote, "I die like Jesus Christ to inspire generations of the weak and the defenseless people." Columbine shooters also had plans or fantasies about doing something similar to what the 9/11 hijackers ultimately did. So this kind of rhetoric where attackers are claiming to be more heroic and sacrificial than they are, it exists in this country and it exists all over the world.
Would you argue then that rather than focus on guns, we should be spending most of our efforts on mental health interventions?
Well, my focus is really behavior. It's not politics. And I guess what I would say is, in terms of countermeasures, the three kind of basic things you can do, the three legs, if you will, of this table, and you can take anyone out and the attack won't happen, is that you can prevent access to weapons, because nobody carries out mass murder suicide with his or her bare hands. you can prevent or try to prevent access to targets, and then you can either identify these offenders ahead of time based on their intent or try to deter their intent. So any one of those three things is going to be very helpful in terms of preventing these kind of attacks.
Right. And you do cite one reason that the U.S. has so few suicide bombers here is lack of access to bombs, which I guess argues for the first part of what you just said, which is more restrictions on weapons that can carry out mass murders.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. It's a good point you make. And people who kind of don't understand how human behavior works would make this simplification that, well, anyone can go online and learn how to build bombs. That's true in principle, but in practice, these attackers, suicide bombers, almost never build their own bombs. And if you put up barriers to bombs or firearms or anything else, certain people will see that kind of barrier turn around and their life will take a different path.
Although, to argue against that point, I guess anybody could turn a car into a suicide bomb for many circumstances if they so desired.
Well, the thing is, with these suicide terrorists in particular, particularly Islamic suicide terrorists, one of the reasons we don't see them just kind of there have been a few attacks where people drove a car or a truck into a crowd, but they're afraid of not dying. There's a chance you don't die if you do something like that, and they are terrified of facing the consequences of continuing to live in this world.
Let's take a phone call. George in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC.
Yeah, hi. I don't want to take too cheap a shot, but does the gentleman remember a guy named Richard Speck? My real question was, there seems to be a great difference between individual spree killers and suicide, and what I think of as a suicide bomber. There's no social milieu around the spree killer. There's no one recruiting people to go and shoot people in a school. There are people making suicide bombs, vests, as the speaker
right.
just said, and that's a tremendous difference. I understand he has a book to sell, but there's a difference.
Right, and it's a good question. There is an organization, various political organizations, you know, for various causes that are literally recruiting suicide bombers and cultivating them. So that's different from he uses Richard Speck and, you know, you could say the Virginia Tech shooter or the movie theater shooter or take your pick.
Sure. Well, it's a good point. And frankly, you know, I wouldn't be doing my job if I had ignored the role of organizations. Of course, that's something I'd thought about before. So there's a couple points as far as that goes. One is the misconception about recruitment. A lot of suicide bombers, believe it or not, they seek out the organization rather than the other way around. So they look for the organization and are basically just looking for someone to give them a bomb to do what they want to do and had decided to do on their own. In other words, and frankly, Muhammad Atta, 9/11 ringleader, he went and sought out an organization that would let him carry out a suicide attack. He had that idea on his own. And then I guess the other thing I would say is, yeah, of course there are differences, and sometimes organizations make these kind of attacks much more likely to occur, and that's why we have far more suicide bombings in places like Palestine than we have lone attacks, you know, suicidal mass shootings in the U.S.
What do you think about some of the people who only kill themselves, like Mohamed Bouazizi, the Tunisian fruit vendor, whose mm-hmm. self-immolation is credited with sparking the Arab Spring, saying he and other protesters like him should be seen as, well, do you say that he and other protesters like him should be seen as primarily suicidal? He's so different from, let's say, an Al-Qaeda member, and he's considered a worldwide hero for what he did.
Yeah, well, people get pretty darn sensitive if you tell them that their heroes are not kind of what the legend suggests. I have looked at that case, and it's pretty clear that he was suicidal in the conventional sense, that he was traumatized by being put in this, trapped in this hopeless situation where he couldn't make a living because he'd been humiliated by the government and they'd taken his vegetable vendor cart away. He couldn't afford the license to be able to make a living, and he couldn't make a living to afford the license. You know, it was a catch-22. So, yeah, ultimately, he was suicidal. People want to interpret that as as a act, a political statement, that's okay with me. You know, ultimately, you could say that governments have some responsibility for keeping them their people mentally healthy, and they failed in his case.
Many people recommended Mohamed Bouazizi for Time Magazine's Person of the Year that year. What about the self-immolations in Tibet, similarly, where there's been this rash of them in recent months, where, you know, there was not the same thing at the same pace before?
Yeah, that's a good question. I'm interested in that, too. I don't know, so I wouldn't want to kind of impugn their motives without having studied it in depth. But I guess I would just say, sometimes if you look very close at these cases, you'll be surprised what you found out. As far as the kamikazes, for instance, went at the end of World War II, I was surprised to find out that there's a whole kind of myth of martyrdom when it comes to the kamikazes, too, that they were actually coerced and broken and beaten, and that a lot of them committed suicide even before flying their planes into Allied warships. So there's a lot of information out there that under scrutiny turns out to be different than we would expect.
Last question. We noticed that in your previous book, Human Killing Machines, Systematic Indoctrination in Iran, Nazi Germany, Al-Qaeda, and Abu Ghraib. So you obviously dealt with the systematic indoctrination.
Mm-hmm.
But in that book, you said of Osama bin Laden that, quote, the best scenario might be if he is killed by soldiers in a surprise attack, leaving a clearly identifiable corpse.
Yeah.
You wrote that before they did it.
Yeah, I wrote that about 3 years before it came out in the book, 2 years before it happened. You know, I guess it just goes to show that kind of good analysis is as close as we can get to predicting the future. So, you know, if you, and I do this frankly in my classes, let's outline the different possibilities of what could happen. Let's look at the pros and cons and the probabilities and determine what's the most likely and what's most preferable.
Well, too bad they left you out of Zero Dark 30. We will have
right.
to leave it there with Adam Lankford, whose new book is The Myth of Martyrdom, What Really Drives Suicide Bombers, Rampage Shooters, and Other Self-Destructive Killers. Very provocative. Thank you very much.
Thanks. It's my pleasure.